it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Next guest, Ruth Barrett, is a terrific writer and reporter at The Atlantic. I encourage you to read her latest piece. Terrific job. I mean, we've been talking about youth sports on this show, the mad, mad world of niche sports. She focused on it. She focused on Ivy League obsessed parents and the desperation and the crazy that it exists there. And Ruth Barrett is joining us. Are you in Connecticut? Is that where you are?
I am. I am right in the red hot epicenter of youth sport mania, niche sport mania.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Because the piece focuses, or at least opens, with squash and then talks about lacrosse. And give us an idea of, you know, what at first turns you on to this. Why do you pick this as a topic?
Well, that's actually an excellent question. I just told you that I currently live in Connecticut with my husband and two kids, but we just moved here a couple of years ago, so I'm pretty new to this environment. Before, I lived in Connecticut. We lived in Southern California, and my experience of sort of parental sports mania was really, you know, going to my son's Little League games, and then you'd see some really fired up dads, you know, on the bleachers, you know, with their Adam's apples, bulging, you know, yelling at their 10-year-old pitchers, you know, saying, come on, Henry, you know, we talked about that arm slot, or, you know, hey, where's your release point? And, you know, they'd get really super fired up about baseball, and they were, you know, like a lot of UCLA, USC alums who'd come to these games and get really intense in the bleachers. So I thought that that was parental sports intensity. And then I moved to Fairfield County, Connecticut. I live in Westport. I also, you know, interact with a lot of families from Greenwich, Darien, New Canaan, what's called the Gold Coast of Connecticut, and a lot of private equity parents, lots of parents who may be senior partners in law firms. Many of them went to Ivy League schools. They want their kids to do the same, and they see sports as the pathway. So sports started to feel very different when I moved to Connecticut, and these were families whose kids had it all. I mean, these families live in beautiful homes with three-car garages, gorgeous golden retrievers who have been purchased from the best kennels where they're bred for temperament. They have plunge pools. They have trampolines. They go to the best private schools. They have everything. And then you notice that these kids are being completely eviscerated by their parents because they are kind of frog marched into these small sports, which their parents see as, you know, the best shot at the Ivies. And they are put onto training regimens for these sports that are so intense that, you know, the kids may become elite in these sports, sports like squash, fencing, water polo, crew, to some extent lacrosse. They may become very, very good. They may become top 10 ranked and Ivy recruitable, but they also may completely break down mentally and emotionally and physically. So that was what gave me the idea for the piece. Just seeing these kids who on paper should have a state-of-the-art life, and instead are completely falling apart because they've been put on sports regimens that are so intense and relentless.
Ruth Barrett is our guest of The Atlantic. Her piece in The Atlantic, I will tweet it out again. I tweeted it out a couple of days ago, but it just struck me. Ruth, we were talking on this show. We got a call from a listener who was at a playground who lamented that there are no kids at the playground. Nobody's shooting around anymore. And then we started talking about the industry that youth sports has become. And where is there any time anymore between private lessons and club sports and traveling and, you know, going to get fitted for the right equipment? And, you know, where are kids supposed to go to a playground?
That's absolutely right. And not only that, but kids have imbibed this parental mindset that sports are instrumental, right? That it's not just playing and competing with your friends and, you know, jumping up and, you know, jumping around and being healthy. It's about something that's more high stakes than that. It's about sports as a pathway to something else. And kids are starting to talk about that around here as young as 8 or 9 years old. A friend of mine recently opened her son's door, you know, to check on him because she could hear that he was sobbing in his bed. And she went up to him and she stroked his hair and she asked, "What's wrong?" And he didn't want to tell her, but he was, you know, sobbing into his pillow. And finally, you know, he choked out the words. He said, "Mom, I just have this feeling. I have this feeling that when I get recruited for lacrosse, I'm not going to be D1 recruited. I think I'm only D3. So he was 8 years old, and he's crying into his pillow because the kids at school are all saying, "I'm going to be D1 recruited for basketball, for hockey, for lacrosse. But this kid or that kid is only going to be, you know, let's say Division 3 recruitable." So that's the way that these third graders are talking about sports, and it's crazy.
I also look at, you know, it used to be, if you looked at squash or even lacrosse or some of the sports that you mentioned, that there were more opportunities at colleges, and there were a lot of states that didn't participate with those sports, so it was a numbers game for parents. But now you have colleges like Stanford that are dropping programs. You have spring sports and winter sports that got canceled. And when you look at the sports, as you pointed out, you know, like squash, the accredited tournaments nationally have more than tripled. These are growing sports that now have fewer opportunities. I mean, it's like we're trying to push the kids into a funnel.
That's exactly right. I think maybe 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, if you got into one of these niche sports, like let's say you had a kid who was an exceptional squash player or a premier fencer, that really could be a glide path to a great school that offered one of these programs because there just weren't many kids playing these sports. But now what's happened is these, you know, it's almost like the Bitcoin bubble. These sports became oversaturated as more and more people started to identify them as a potential ticket to the Ivies. So you have sports like squash that have, you know, as I say in my piece, you know, more than tripled on the youth and junior level. But you have no growth whatsoever. And even, you know, this year, actually a contraction in terms of college spots available. So this has produced a really bleak, brittle, kind of every man for himself culture in these sports where you have kids, you know, undermining each other, hurting each other on the court and off the court, trying to sabotage each other's college applications. It's just become the opposite of fun. It's become this very cutthroat pursuit. And as spots are dwindling, you know, especially in the wake of the pandemic and the cancellation of seasons and the reduction of programs, you know, I saw this happening as I was reporting my piece. I was already writing about how it was getting harder and harder to get into a great college, for squash or for lacrosse, because these spots kept you know, number of spots kept shrinking. And then, you know, with sort of COVID-induced budget cuts, you know, you saw them shrinking even further. And so I thought, as I was reporting my piece, wow, is this piece going to turn into a kind of elegy for these sports? Are these sports over, and are parents going to just get off this hamster wheel and pull back? They're not even going to go for it anymore. But then what I concluded is they're not pulling back in this environment of scarcity where there are fewer and fewer spots. They're actually doubling down and becoming even more insane and finding Egyptian squash pros to live above their garage, teach their kids full time. They're really, you know, going bananas even more.
You know, it's interesting because we eventually settled as we were talking this on the idea that the parents are crazy. It's us. It's parents. I've got three daughters, and you know, we've been sucked down the club sports rabbit hole once, and I've got two younger ones. So, you know, where did you see the worst of it? Is it sport by sport, or is it parent to parent? Was it worse in squash than it was in lacrosse, or where did you see the worst of it?
I saw the worst of it in squash. Actually, and having said that, I'm not trying to, you know, trash the sport itself or throw the sport under the bus. Squash is a fast-paced, insanely fun game. I have one kid who plays it a little bit just for fun. She's not on the competitive, you know, junior tournament circuit, nor will she ever be. She just plays a little bit through her school for fun, because her school, like many beautiful, sun-dappled schools around here, have raised the funds to build squash courts because that's, you know, an attractive offering that they can, you know, add to their, you know, the three color brochures that, you know, go out in the mail to attract parents. So squash is really fun, but it tends to, because squash, as differentiated from other sports, squash has is all about metrics. So in other words, U.S. squash keeps track of every junior player's rating and ranking. And so if you are in the top 20 ranked junior squash players in the past, let's say over the past 10 or 15 years, the top 20 junior boys and the top 20 junior girls, 201, you know, they all get recruited by top Ivy League colleges. Then once you start getting into the 21st, the 22nd, the 23rd player, all those spots are already gone. So then they go to the next tier of college. But when parents who are when parents see that, they get a gleam in their eye and they decide to stop at nothing to see if they can have a kid crack the top 20. Whereas in other sports, I think it's a little bit more fungible. I don't know what sports your daughter plays. You know, my son plays baseball. He's a pretty good pitcher, but it's, you know, subjective. You know, some days he has it, some days he doesn't. And I just feel like in squash, because it, you know, it's so numerically based, you know, that leads to parents thinking that the more money they spend, you know, the more rapidly their child will ascend up the ranking. So you have parents spending literally hundreds of thousands of dollars on squash, and that is through private instruction, that is through clinics, that is through international tournaments. You know, there's one tournament that I list in my piece that had a $9,000 entrance fee because it was in South Africa. And, you know, it was optional, but most of the kids on a Stanford team around here opted to go. So, you know, that is a sport that I think is, you know, it maybe has the most dysfunctional and crazy parental culture right now. And it's a combination of too many affluent parents trying to, you know, have their kids compete for fewer and fewer spots, you know, kind of combined with, U.S. squash updating their ranking, you know, every week and you know, just leading to this culture of, you know, if I spend more and more money when I compulsively refresh my browser every week and I see the squash rankings, you know, I'm going to see my daughter, you know, moving up. So
we're talking to Ruth Barrett of The Atlantic. She's got a great piece on the mad world of youth sports and Ivy League obsessed parents. You opened the piece sort of writing about this stay-at-home mom named Sloan, who, you know, played tennis and ran track in high school and educated person. And, you know, she's got kids and she's got a, I think it was a fencer and another kid who's playing sports and they're traveling all over the country. But by the end of the piece, mom has decided that her daughter's going to be a rower because she's 5'11". She's just looking for an angle.
Yeah, you know, everybody is trying to optimize their kids through sports. That's the word that gets thrown around, you know, kind of unironically. You know, how can we optimize our kids, you know, in the most strategic way? You know, and that might involve, let's say that you have a kid who's not tall but is short. And let's say that you're determined that your kid is going to go to Harvard on athletic consideration. And you have a kindergartner and you don't know what sport it's going to be. You know, you might print out all of the Harvard varsity women's rosters, you know, for every sport. And you might see that in soccer, Harvard doesn't have ever any female goalies who are under 6 feet. And you know that you have short genes in your family. So right then and there, you determine that your daughter is never going to become a soccer goalie. Sloan was, you know, in the opposite boat. She saw that she had a daughter who's becoming very tall and willowy, and that might be more of a crew body than a squash body. So she put her in a single scull and is hoping to have her start racing in regattas. See how that goes.
The vast majority of my listeners are not are just trying to figure out what squash is, right? I'm reading the piece, so what advice do you give to rank and file parents? How do we keep a grip?
Well, you know, I think you know, it doesn't matter whether you have a kid who's playing one of these sort of more country club sports like squash, which is kind of like racquetball but with a black kind of non-bouncy ball. If you have a kid who's playing squash or is doing saber fencing or is just playing baseball or basketball or hockey, I don't think it matters. I think that as the kids get older, it becomes very obvious which kids have been kind of stage managed and pushed through these intense sports gauntlets and which kids are doing it because they love it. The kids who've been pushed eventually burn out. You know, and some of them are now burning out sooner rather than later. And the kids who are in it because they love it, you know, those are the kids who, you know, the parents don't have to over-strategize about how do I get my kid recruited. Because guess what? If you have a kid who's phenomenally talented at a sport and who loves that sport, you know, coaches are going to spot that kid 3 feet, you know, 3 fields away. You know, the coaches will come to you. You don't even have to spend money on these showcases and combines and clinics. If you have a kid who loves his or her sport and is talented, you know, it's a small world. And, you know, coaches, you know, if your kid wants to play in college, coaches will find out about your kid. They will get on coaches' radar. You don't have to do as much as you think. You don't have to spend as much money as you think. That, I guess, would be my takeaway.
Ruth, you did a terrific job with this. Commend you for it. And thank you for giving us so much of your time. Thank you.
Oh, it was fun. Thank you very much. Take care.
Ruth Barrett of The Atlantic. Great piece. I'll tweet it out if you haven't seen it already. You can find it on The Atlantic's website and in the magazine coming up in the next issue. But it really underscores the stuff we were talking about just a couple of days ago on this show. And it's interesting to me, as the resources of parents increased, the pressure increased, the angling increased. It was, let's try fencing. That doesn't work. Let's try rowing. Let's try this, you know, go from the saber to the squash court. And it was amazing to me to read the lengths at which parents in that community were going to try to get their kids an Ivy League look. And you know, and now you have fewer opportunities with Stanford dropping sports. Certainly the Ivies dropped their sports season and are now a lot of kids probably wondering where they're supposed to go play. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. I gotta tell you, the problem's us. We know it. Parents, we know it. When it comes to youth sports, it's us. Last weekend, we're taking the six-year-old to her soccer game, and we say, listen, the important thing is that you're here to have fun. Make sure you have fun. I kept saying that, reiterating it. But I couldn't hide my joy when she scored her first goal and subsequent after the game, and then I realized, like, gosh, I'm making... you know, what happens if she doesn't score a goal in the next game? I'm trying to be self-aware. Jimmy's in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Jimmy, what's up, man?
John, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. Just absolutely love your show, but you struck a nerve today with your guest that you had a couple minutes ago. I'm a retired teacher coach, long time, over 30 years here in the Eugene area. And probably 25 years ago when I was a basketball coach, had a parent call me about his freshman son, wanted to meet. And I thought, well, this is great. I'll get to meet the family. And we sat down in my office, and he proceeded to tell me that his son had a dream to attend the University of Michigan, to follow in the Fab Five footsteps, and how was I going to get him there as a varsity basketball coach. And I looked at this dad and looked at the son, and I immediately felt sorry for this son because he was a 5'9", good athlete as a ninth grader. But I proceeded to tell him that what he needed to focus on is not so much trying to make it to Michigan, but first of all, just try to be the very best ninth grader that he could be at our school. And as he kept working at becoming better and better, find the fun and find the joy of the game. And, of course, the dad really didn't like that particular answer and felt like I was not answering the question.
Yeah.
And I finally ended the conversation by saying, well, let's just do this. When you become the best player at your position in this big city of Eugene, then we can talk about where to go from there, because then we've got the
Jimmy, I got to go to break, but I get it. And I empathize with the coaches and the out there that have had to deal with parents.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Faced Truth.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.